Translation: all those who followed the principles of King Runtidev were totally favored by his mercy and became pure devotees attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Thus they all became the best of yogis. Purport: the best yogis or mystics are the devotees as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse? Yes, thank you. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. The best yogi is he who constantly thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of the heart. Because Runtideva was the king, the chief executive in the state, all the residents of the state became devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, by the king's transcendental association. This is the influence of a pure devotee. If there is one pure devotee, his association can create hundreds and thousands of pure devotees. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that a Vaishnava is meritorious in proportion to the number of devotees he has created. A Vaishnava becomes superior not simply by jugglery of words, but by the number of devotees he has created for the Lord. Here the word Runtidevanuvartinaha indicates that Runtideva's officers, friends, relatives and subjects all became first-class Vaishnavas by his association. In other words, Runtideva is confirmed herein to be a first-class devotee or Mahabhagavat. Mahatsevang dwaram ahur vimuktehe. One should render service to such Mahatmas, for then one will automatically achieve the goal of liberation. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has also said, Charya Vaishnava Seva Nishta Payeche Keba. One cannot be liberated by his own effort, but if one becomes subordinate to a pure Vaishnav, the door to liberation is open. Srila Prabhupada is sometimes criticized by certain rascals who fault him for translating his books in a Krishna conscious way. They consider this to be an artificial imposition on the text. The idea is that Krishna spoke and anyone can deconstruct it in their own way. Krishna didn't know what he was talking about, and therefore anyone can come along and impose their own meaning, my own meaning, how I understand it. Srila Prabhupada would often translate the word yogi as devotee. He would say, well, yogi means someone sitting with long matted hair and a long beard and performing austerities, controlling the breath, and so on. This appears to be a modern understanding of the word yogi, because it's clearly used in Bhagavad Gita to indicate all classes of yogis, as indicated by the verse that Srila Prabhupada translates here, or quotes here, yogi nam api sarvesham. There are different classes of yogis. Of course, yoga is also classified. When the word yoga is mentioned, it sometimes particularly refers to the Ashtanga yoga or process, in which Dhyana yoga is prominent. Therefore, we speak of Karmis, Gyanis, Yogis and Bhaktas. So in this context, yogi means the kind of yogi that people who criticize Srila Prabhupada thinks that he should always translate the word yogi to refer to. However, the very verse, yogi nam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shadhavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamo mataha, makes it very clear from Krishna's perspective, and he is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, and Therefore, what he says should be taken seriously, not just as a kind of template to draw your own ideas on. He says that the best yogi is one who is a devotee. So clearly, yogi can be translated as devotee, and according to context, Srila Prabhupada translated it as devotee. We see here also in this verse, it said about Ranti Deva, about the followers of Ranti Deva, that his followers, they all became yogis. Now, considering that Ranti Deva himself was not a yogi of the type who sits in a mountain cave or under a tree in the forest and stares at the tip of his nose, as described in Bhagavad Gita, with half-closed eyes, and meditates on the incoming and outgoing breath, Ranti Deva wasn't that kind of yogi, so it would seem very strange if everyone in his kingdom became yogis. And it would be difficult to imagine how the kingdom would be a kingdom at all if everyone was a yogi, because a kingdom means there are various social, economic functions, social and economic functions within the kingdom. But if everyone becomes a yogi of the sitting in the jungle or cave type, then what kind of kingdom is it? That was actually the situation in the Satya Yoga, when Kriteyadhyayato Vishnum, the process of God realization, the Yoga Dharma was meditation on Vishnu. And the Vanashram wasn't established according to the Bhagavatam. Everyone was pure devotee, and there wasn't or highly elevated hangsa jati, the nature of swan-like person. So there wasn't a need for social organization. There weren't much social activities going on. There's no need actually for persons who are interested in self-realization to interact with others at all. They can simply meditate, and by the grace of the Lord, Chirani King Patina. Well, they don't even need clothes. Shukadev Goswami says, are there not clothes on the road? But he himself wasn't wearing any clothes, so it's not required for a Paramahamsa. Of course, in a cold climate like Britain, clothes would be useful, but in a warmer climate, clothes, they don't serve the, in many cases, they don't serve the function of keeping the body warm, because you'd be more comfortable with them off, because it's quite warm. So they serve the function of covering the body out of chastity, what's the word, reserve, decorum, decency, that's a good word. Oh, right, we have a whole bunch. What else?
Modesty.
Modesty, that's the word I was looking for, thank you very much. And there are many social functions which go with clothing also. You can, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that this is a good one for those who say that, well, we can just wear kami clothes. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Gora Bhakta Priya Vesha Dadhana Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhamana. Dadhana Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhamana. That one of the items favorable to executing bhakti is to wear the kind of clothing which is dear to the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to have also to be beautified by tilak and tulasi mala. So we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was wearing dhoti in his grihastha life, panchakach, with five folds. So anyway, the yogis, the type of yogi that Ranti Deva was surrounded by his followers, which kind of yogi that is qualified here, the statement that there were yogis is qualified. One may start to think that there are a lot of bearded people and yoginis also with matted hair. But they were Narayana Parayana. It's the Sankirtan scores. They were attached to Narayana. They were devotees, as he was a devotee. That's natural, that if the king is a devotee, then his followers will also be devotees. Everyone's supposed to follow the king. It's natural, although there's this very strange idea in modern society that everyone should be equal, and therefore communism was established on that basis, and democracy on that basis also, but it's not true that everyone's equal. And in fact, no two people are equal in any way. Maybe in height and weight you can find people. Otherwise, the fingerprint is different, the face is different, and the psychology of everyone is different. Some people are more intelligent. There are theories that, well, if you give everyone the same chance and the same kind of education, then all came out the same level of intelligence. But it's not true. People are different. Everyone's different. No two people are the same. And some people are natural leaders and some people are not. And to try to make a person who doesn't have leadership qualities into a leader can be disastrous for both the person who's put in the position and for the persons who are supposed to follow him. And then they become all upset, and then they throw out the leader, and they say, well, we don't believe in leaders, because they never saw, they didn't have the properly trained leaders. First, it should be seen if they're capable to be leaders, and then trained. That's the Varnashram system, that in childhood, the boys are separated, or they're trained according to their inclination, which is indicated just after birth, shortly after birth. Just like we said, there was a common ceremony that the child would be placed, or some items would be placed within grabbing distance of the baby. A book, shastra, some money for the kshatriya inclination. I don't know if they put a knife or something. I'm not sure exactly. I can't remember. So what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu choose? Chose the book, yeah. So his parents are very happy with that. We see also Parikshit Maharaj. In the all the children of the higher castes, they had their astrological chart made up shortly after birth. That's still going on in India. And it's understood from this that what kind of person they're going to be. And they're trained accordingly. So, Rantideva was Narayana Parayana. And his followers were all Narayana Parayana. They all became devotees by his association. The best yogi is he who constantly thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart. In the purport of the previous verse, Srila Prabhupada writes, by always being Krishna-minded or Krishna-conscious, one can surpass the influence of Maya. And here in this purport, I'll read it again, Srila Prabhupada writes that, the best yogi is he who constantly thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of the heart. And Srila Prabhupada finishes the purport by saying, by quoting, Mahat Sevam Dwara Maho Vimuktehe. By serving the great, one should render service to such Mahatmas, for then one will automatically achieve the goal of liberation. So by thinking of Krishna constantly, one becomes liberated, and that thinking of Krishna constantly became Krishna constantly became possible for the citizens in the state of Rantideva by his influence. And by his mercy, they all became devotees and they all became liberated from material contamination. It's concomitant, it's simultaneous. It's just in the previous verse, Srila Prabhupada quoted, Krishna Surja Sama Maya Hoyanda Ka Jaha Krishna. Taha nahi maya radhika. The example is given of the sun Because in the presence of the sun, there's no darkness. There's no question of darkness if there's sunlight. So in the same way, if there's Krishna consciousness, there's no Maya. One doesn't have to make any separate plans to get free of Maya. And therefore, bhakti yoga, or being a devotee, is the best kind of yoga, because simply by performing the activities of bhakti, one automatically gets free from Maya. Whereas all the other processes of yoga, they are attempted as a means to get free from Maya. Or in the lowest stage, karma yoga, one isn't even trying to get free from Maya. One hasn't even understood, hasn't come to the platform of gyan and understanding that one should attempt to be freed from Maya. That comes automatically for a devotee. So, Rantideva, by his influence, all his followers became pure devotees. It's sometimes asked that why was the big fight to put Yudhishthira on the throne? Why such a big endeavor? Duryodhana was there, he was ruling. He wasn't the nicest of persons, but he was ruling the state. Why put Yudhishthira in there? Because Krishna wanted that his devotee would be a ruler. Even though the social functions of a ruler may be discharged very well by a non-devotee, the purpose of society, namely to help and guide people to become Krishna conscious, will not be served. This is the problem of the modern secular state, that they have the idea that, well, we just organize society very well and that's the job of a government. And then people can choose their own religious inclination or not to be religious. It's not the job of the state to get involved in this at all. But Srila Prabhupada, one of the many politically incorrect stances, which now we would say politically incorrect. I don't think that term was extant or hadn't even been invented when Prabhupada was here. But Srila Prabhupada, he didn't mind to go against Vox Populi. He pointed out the deficiencies of democracy and stated that the role of a government or the role of any leader is not simply to make arrangements for the material comfort of the followers, but to guide them on the path of liberation. This, of course, is in pursuance of a statement of Rishabhdev. Does anyone know that? Guru nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, janani nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat, devang natatsyan, napatischa satsyan, namochayadya samapetam rityam. One shouldn't become a guru, a father, mother, relative, master, or in any way accept any reverence from others unless he can guide them on the path to liberation. It's a very challenging statement, is it not? Don't become a father and mother. Don't take any position of leadership. Don't accept any respect from others unless you can benefit them in the best way, which is to lead them on the path from becoming free from birth and death. So Rantideva accepted the respect of his followers, of his citizens, his subjects. He didn't shy away from that, he accepted it, but he gave them in return the opportunity to be Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada had the stupendously ambitious plan to make the whole world Krishna conscious. Does anyone know about that, by the way? Mm-hmm. Ever heard of that? We don't hear so much of it these days. Now we're content to be a bona fide religion. But actually, Srila Prabhupada wanted to change the world and make the whole world Krishna conscious and have Krishna conscious kings like Arjuna. Well, Yudhishthira was the king. Arjuna was assisting him. Why? Well, if the king is the, if the leaders are Krishna conscious, then people will follow. That's the idea. What if they don't follow? Well, there is a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's in which he was quoting Parikshit Maharaj. He was stating about Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj's policy was, if anyone was eating meat, kill them. If anyone was taking intoxication, kill them. If anyone was having illicit sex, kill them. If anyone was gambling, kill them. I heard it on a tape. I never found it ever since. I think it's been expunged from the records. It's volatile. But Srila Prabhupada was quoting Parikshit Maharaj. And there was no... The four principles of our dharma, or the four violations of dharma, of the four pillars of dharma, namely meat-eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, did not exist in the kingdom of Parikshit. You can understand why. He didn't allow it. Very strict. So that's why Kali, when he was exiled by Parikshit, Parikshit said, yeah, you can go to any of these places. He said, well, there aren't any of those places, because you rule over the whole world. That's another thing that Srila Prabhupada said, which modern people won't accept. Parikshit ruled over the whole world and says, the seven oceans, kind of,
seven islands.
Was it Saptadvipa? I think it said seven. I was thinking Saptadvipa. I was trying to think of the Sanskrit. And anyway, we can check it out afterwards. But Parikshit ruled the whole world, and Kali said, well, there's nowhere I can go on this planet. So then Parikshit Maharaj said, okay, you go where there is gold. And gold has become the, or money has become the symbol of cheating. Just like in Sweden a few days ago when I changed Swedish krona into pounds as I was coming to England, I got fresh, brand new notes, never used, freshly printed. Is there gold to back it? No. Why is it called a pound? 1 pound, because it used to be exchangeable for a pound of gold. And now an ounce of gold costs how much? 600 pounds or something more? I don't know. Anyone here in that line? No. Well, you know, it might be. So they're just cheating. They issue paper money. Srila Prabhupada said that this has caused the corruption of the whole of society. This easy money, but it's not real money. And it's exchangeable for illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating. These are the business. Just see the difference. Parikshit Maharaj was taking the trouble to go. He wasn't just sitting at home listening to some Hindustani music, having some dancing girls, but he went out in his kingdom to check that there's no illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, or intoxication. He went out. He was busy to see that. And the modern governments, they are promoting these things. They're promoting slaughterhouses, prostitution. This pornography is such a huge business. Why doesn't the government stop it? It's they, in the name of art, they say, well, what is it? Free expression. It's not art. It's vulgar. It's the lowest class thing on earth, and it messes up people's minds. But it's business. It's good business. And probably the politicians themselves, they may enjoy it also. So the situation is so horrible all over the world that the governments, who are supposed to be protecting the citizens, not only from robbers and thieves, which they don't do at all, which Srila Prabhupada also said, the government has no right to tax the citizens if they can't protect them. If you can't walk on the street without feeling safe that the gold earrings won't get lopped off by someone, they'll cut the lobe of your ear to take the gold earrings off, which in most cities of the world nowadays you can't walk safely and securely. So if you can't walk on the street, the government has no right to tax you. They're taking money, but they can't protect you to even walk on the street of the land. The modern governments are promoting all sinful activities. They're either promoting or covertly supporting. Here's another one for those who like conspiracy theories. The we heard during the days of the Cold War that with the spy satellites of the United States of America, if someone happened to drop a Kopeck coin on the streets of Moscow, then the satellite could read the writing on it. That's what they told. I mean, maybe it was an excuse because they were taxing the citizens and they had to tell them that they were getting something valuable in return. But if they could do that, then how is it that they can't stop thousands of tons of cocaine coming into the country every year? Conspiracy. Well, you can work it out yourself, but it doesn't seem to make sense to this little brain sitting on this little seat here. So the governments, they are promoting all sinful activities. For those of you who are from India, and you know very well what the BJP is, which is portrayed outside of India as the fundamentalist fanatic Hindu organization. I guess it's just a matter of perspective. But anyway, during their government time, they very proudly opened up slaughterhouses. Yeah. Mechanized, modern, state-of-the-art slaughterhouses. So, the thing is, they're supposed to be a Hindu party. But business is business, as they say. The most important thing of modern governments is money. The political leaders are pawns of the big corporations. They can't get elected unless they get the money to support their campaigns. And if they try to go against the big corporations, then, well, they might end up with a bullet in their head if the worst comes to worst, or they'll get removed by political means or whatever. So the Vedic kings, what a difference between the Vedic kings and the present day rulers. During the time of the Swaraj movement in India, Mahatma Gandhi and others gave the idea that, well, we'll get rid of the British. The British got rid of the Muslim rule for us, and now we're under British rule, so we'll have independence, and then again we can have Ram Raja. They had the idea. It'll be like being under Ram, but where is Ram? You can't even have a temple of Ram at his birthplace. This is the situation in modern India, in the name of secularism or Muslim appeasement, the fundamentalists would call it. So, as Srila Prabhupada said, we want one Arjuna. We don't need a whole house of commoners with very common low-class ideas, or a house of lords. Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada's criticism of the lords is that he gave the example of Robert Clive, who was just some insignificant person who came to India, and the British there were in an advantageous position, so he was able to, by various machinations, to make a good fortune, and then he became Sir Robert Clive, and then he purchased, you pay enough money and you purchase a you become a lord. Of course, that's not allowed nowadays, but that was the system. You build a big country house and you become a lord. So it's just any low-class person, if they get some money, they could become a lord. And actually, they're all very low-class, because that's stated in the Bhagavatam, that in Kali Yuga, prajaste bhakshishyanti mlecha rajanyarupina, that mlechas, meat-eaters, they will become the kings, or so-called kings. And their business will be not to protect the citizens, but to devour them. Literally the word is given, to eat them. Generally that's understood allegorically, although there have been leaders in Kali Yuga. Idi Amin, you may have heard the name. Those of you from East Africa. You from East Africa, your parents? Huh? Parents are from East Africa. Well, they were lucky to get out of Uganda alive, even though every piece of gold on their body was removed before they left. But he had a habit of literally eating his political opponents, just to make sure that even if their ghosts were around, they could know that he was the boss, he was in charge. So modern rulers, they don't care for their citizens at all. And in recent British history, we had the phenomena of the leaders deliberately lying on various counts to send their armies to a war which was being waged, or to invade a country to be more precise, which is being waged in the name of humanitarian democracy, truth, justice, etc., but actually for various geopolitical, which translates in the end as money, economic reasons. So the modern leaders, far from being truthful, which is one of the divine qualities, they are prepared to lie through their teeth, as the saying goes. And even more surprising, even after they're exposed for all these things, the citizens still elect them. So as Srila Prabhupada said, that you can't complain about, don't complain about the government, you voted them. So Ranjideva was a pure devotee. By his association, all the citizens became devotees. Srila Prabhupada gives a comment here. A Vaishnava becomes superior not simply by jugglery of words, but by the number of devotees he has created for the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, he neither juggled words, he was very straightforward in his delivery, very clear. And he did the actual service to the Sampradaya of fulfilling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. While others talked about Krishna consciousness, which is very good. I'm not saying it's bad to talk about Krishna consciousness, but Srila Prabhupada didn't just only talk, but he made the whole world talk about Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he is the special devotee, there's no doubt about it. Among all devotees are special. Every devotee is glorious. But Srila Prabhupada's position is undoubtedly extremely special, even in all the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We can say that, we may think, well, we're saying that because we're sitting in an ISKCON temple and that's the kind of thing we say, beat our drum. But even if we examine in a subjective manner or a neutral manner, certainly what Srila Prabhupada has done is unprecedented, inimitable, and the sign of, characteristic of being a very special and very dear devotee of Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One should render service to such Mahatmas, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahu Vimukti. One should try to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. That will help us. These preaching activities of Krishna consciousness, which Srila Prabhupada so much emphasized, by doing that, we will not be the losers. If we think that, well, I have to go away and simply sit and chant somewhere, we won't get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas in the same way as we will if we sacrifice, make sacrifices for serving this mission. The mercy comes to those who attempt to serve this mission. We're not the losers, even if our sadhana is sometimes not as tight as we would like it to be, or as, but if we're fully engaged in the preaching mission, then certainly the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, who's carrying the mercy of all the previous acharyas, that will come down on all the devotees. As Srila Prabhupada said, that if you just hold on to my dhoti, I'll take you back to Godhead. And we practically see that Srila Prabhupada's mercy is flowing on those devotees who attempt to serve this preaching mission. It's not that preaching is for lower class people and lower class Vaishnavas, and because we're very rajasic, we have to be engaged like this, but that may be true in the beginning stage, but Srila Prabhupada defined an uttamadhikari in his commentary on the Nectar of Instruction verse, where the various grades of devotees are described. Srila Prabhupada describes as an uttamadhikari, as one who chants a minimum of 16 rounds a day, and who is fully absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness. That's how Prabhupada defined an uttamadhikari. Once I was at Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan, and my godbrother who I was visiting there with, we came across one Gauriamat sannyasi who was also there, and this godbrother of mine knew that sannyasi, so he introduced me to that sannyasi, and he told me that I'm preaching, and the immediate response of I'm traveling and preaching. The immediate response of the sannyasi was, "Well, don't preach too much, because you have to perform sadhana also," which can be valid advice, no doubt, because we have to keep a balance with our own sadhana. But at the time, I thought that, well, I didn't say it, but I thought that, well, I didn't think that Srila Prabhupada would respond like that. There's a difference in outlook. In Prabhupada, he so much emphasized this preaching of Krishna consciousness. And just like Srila Prabhupada translates that verse, that I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. What is that verse, Sanskrit? Ananyas chintayanto maam ye janah paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyam. Again, it's Srila Prabhupada has worked his own understanding. His own understanding means as Krishna directed him to translate it. Yoga kshemam vahamyam, I carry what they need for their practice of yoga, Krishna says, for those who are always thinking of me without deviation. So Srila Prabhupada, we see that those who dedicate themselves to this preaching mission, that he helps them. There's no doubt. We see again and again and again, even though our devotees are mostly not very learned or very austere, which are the these are considered important qualities for sadhus, but compared to traditional sadhus in India, most of our devotees are not very learned or very austere. But that they dedicate themselves to spreading Krishna consciousness and cultivate always thinking of Krishna earns them the mercy of Krishna, earns them the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So, Hare Krishna, I'll finish here. Are there any questions or comments, please? Yes? Well, that's what you always say. But you mean it, I hope.
Yes.
It's a British kind of thing to always say thank you. And
I was born in Poland.
Yeah, I know, but you've been here more than... You've been here now probably more, isn't it? More years than you lived in Poland, is it?
12 years, I think it was 7.
12 years. And if you put together all the minutes that you spend on the streets chanting Harinam, it'll probably be about half that time, right? Yeah. 6 years on Oxford Street, Piccadilly, chanting the holy names. Jai, Hare Krishna. Preaching is sadhana. Well, this is an interesting point, because sadhana we generally take to mean sitting in the temple, chanting Hare Krishna and listening to class and all these activities. But sadhana, it means a means. So everything we do is sadhana. If it's aimed at the sadhya or the goal, which is love for Krishna, here. Sadhyam tat priti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, love for Krishna. So it's all sadhana. It's not. Sometimes we hear devotees saying, well, I hope, what is this? I hope everything is going well in your preaching and bhajan. But actually, although there is a distinction, we generally say our bhajan or our sadhana is sitting and chanting, and preaching is something different. But actually, preaching is also part of bhajan. And bhajan is also part of preaching, because if we don't also perform, we're going out and preaching, everyone should chant Hare Krishna, you chant 16 rounds a day, but if we don't chant ourselves, then what kind of preaching is that? Or if we say everyone should rise early and attend the Mangaladi, but we don't do it ourselves, it's not really preaching at all. What is that? Apane Achare Bhakti Prabhu Jibir Shikai. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught by his example. Apanena koile dharma shikhan na jai. If one doesn't himself practice, then how can you teach? So yes, preaching is also part of our sadhana. But a balance is also needed. We also need to have regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, all the inauspicious things within the heart are destroyed. So this is also required. Yes, please.
What's the greatest service we can give to Krishna?
What is the greatest service we can give to Krishna? We cannot give any service to Krishna. Krishna doesn't need any service from us. The greatest service begins with understanding that we are not at all qualified to serve Him. Then we can begin to be admitted into the service of His servants, which Krishna recognizes as the greatest service. To serve His servants. But then we're not qualified to serve even them. So then we have to simply beg to become, to be allowed to render some service to the servants of 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 Krishna.
So clearing the temple, doing 16 rounds every day, listening to what you're doing now, preaching and all these things.
Yes.
So what's all the...
What's it for? It's for service to Krishna. But he mercifully accepts it. Although he doesn't need it.
Every master has something his best.
Yeah, but it's not the thing. Krishna doesn't need our service because he's self-sufficient. He wants our love. So it's not so much the service we perform as the attitude we do it with.
So loving him, praising him.
Yeah, but love means service also. So one can clean the floor for Krishna. We could employ someone to clean the floor here. And actually many of our temples throughout the world, they do employ people to clean the floor. But they're cleaning it for, you know, £10 a day or whatever they're paid for. So they don't get love of Krishna. But devotees who do it thinking that I'm so fortunate to have this opportunity, though I'm completely unqualified, but somehow or other I've been given this opportunity to clean the floor in Krishna's temple and take up all the dust that all the Vaishnavas have left from their feet in the temple room. I'm so fortunate. So one who thinks like that with pure devotion, that service is very pleasing to Krishna. But if someone comes in with the latest fancy cleaning fluids and it's all a super job, but they're just doing it for money, then it doesn't please Krishna. So it's the attitude. So the main thing is to love Krishna. But then if we love Him, we have to serve Him. Otherwise, if you simply say, I love you, I love you, I love you, but, you know, I just love you, that's all. I'm not doing anything for you, I simply love you. Then, just like, here's a little story I made up. Of the, in the old days when there used to be families of men and women married together and the man used to go to work, and the woman stayed at home, so just we can project our mind into this strange scenario. And, okay, so the man comes home at night, and the wife says, darling, I love you. So Bhagavatam. Oh, that's nice. I love you so much. That's great. What did you cook? I didn't cook anything, but I love you. So he may say, well, better you don't love me and you cooked something. So actually, in Indian culture, husband and wife don't say to each other, I love you, I love you, I love you. In Western culture, they say, I love you, I love you, I love you, and then, you know, after a few days, I divorce you. That's all. But in Indian culture, they don't say, it's not said, it's just understood, that's all. It's a more subtle culture. And if you say, I love you, that means that there may be some doubt about it. If you have to say it, you never tell me that you love me. It's understood. If the husband is doing his duty and the wife is doing her duty as a wife and mother, it's understood. And then they discuss about the future of the children and this and that. And it's understood by their dealings. Or maybe they don't love each other. But anyway, they go on with life. If they love each other, very good. If they don't, well, too bad. But, you know, you have to go on with life. That's all. So the best way to serve Krishna is to... Well, you'll get various answers. Sometimes it's stated to chant his names. That's love, isn't it? Of course, you can be. Sometimes people are paid to chant the holy names also. That's in Bengal, where it's a funny mix-up. Because they've heard... The idea is that chanting the holy names is very auspicious, so they have musical bands, just like they have rock bands and whatever the latest mode of music is. They pay people. Now, actually, they don't do it now, right? It's all coming out of a machine. They make it. You make one guy with a computer makes all the. There's no. Is there still rock musicians and this and that? I suppose there must be some. Uncle Mick and Grandfather Mick. Jagger, multiple grandfather. So it's considered very auspicious to chant the holy name. So they organize festivals in which they have bands that go around and they sing, and they'll sing whatever you pay them to. If you pay them to chant Hare Krishna, they'll chant Hare Krishna. If you make up some other mantra which you think is better, they'll chant that too, because whatever the flavor of the day, whatever you want. So you get bands going around singing Hare Krishna. At their next gig, they'll chant Jai Guru Dev or whatever it is. But that's not love. But generally, to call out someone's name means you love them. If again and again you call someone's name, there'll be attachment, isn't it? It's like a mother calls her child. So, or we are asked to call out as a child calls for the mother in that mood. So we'll finish here. Is there any other question? No, all right. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Hare Krishna.